From New Orleans, this is Music Inside Out. I'm Gwen Tompkins. Ricky Lee Jones didn't know that her voice was unusual until she heard herself singing as a teenager. The song she recorded was Nights in White Satin by the Moody Blues. But she didn't sound like they did.
And when I heard it back, I was so disappointed because I sounded just like Michael Jackson singing Nights in White Satin. When we played that, because
I was so... More than 30 years later, Jones still has the voice of a young boy. It's remarkably intact, and so is she. Ricky Lee Jones talks about her new home in New Orleans and her new album, The Other Side of Desire, after the break. The Other Side of Desire is a good name for an album, but hands off, it belongs to Ricky Lee Jones. The Other Side of Desire is Jones's new album that's on her new label that she made in her new hometown of New Orleans. That's an awful lot of new, even for an artist who's as unpredictable as she is. Jones has been charming and challenging her audiences for more than 30 years, singing a wide variety of songs in a wide variety of styles. Her songwriting has introduced us to more characters than Netflix. And people like Woody and Dutch and Wild Girl and Chuck E and Weasel and Stuart and Bub and Rodeo Girl and even Ugly Man sound a heck of a lot more interesting than anybody who lives on television. Although Juliet may be a dog. But what makes Ricky Lee Jones's music transcendent is that she seems to know what so many people are going through, and she presents them and herself in a kind of shimmering light of empathy. That's not easy for most humans to do, because people fall short of expectation all the time. Ricky Lee Jones joins us at Marini Recording Studio. Thanks so much for coming out, and congratulations on your new album.
Thank you. That is a dog. Juliet is a dog.
Woo!
I did try to write it so it could be a depressing song to a girl, but it was about here we are in our apartment getting old, you and me. That's all. Just two old dogs.
Wow.
In French.
Well, how long have you all been together?
13 years.
That's a while.
Yeah. My daughter brought her home on New Year's Eve 2001. Yes. I had said no pit bulls. My daughter was about 14 then. So
yeah.
She immediately went and got a pit bull and brought it home. And it was a little yellow puppy. So I ended up with this wonderful animal that's been with me most of our lives together ever since.
And that's his very sweet name, Juliet.
Yes. Charlotte named her. I don't know. Maybe she was expecting a Romeo, but we've had a few males, but they didn't last so long.
Ah, well, you know, the girls,
when
they always stick
yeah.
around longer. They love longest, as Jane Austen's used to say, right?
Yeah.
The girls love longest. But, you know, the first song on your new album, The Other Side of Desire, may be one of my all-time favorite songs, irrespective of who wrote it. I mean,
it's that strong.
Thank you.
And it's called Jimmy Choo's. And, you know, it does mention the shoes, of course, but it sets an extraordinary tone for the rest of the album.
Well, I think it, it mentions the shoes, but the shoes, of course, are, what is it? It's a metaphor, an allegory. It's a secret thing that you have that lifts you up when nothing else will, yes. I would never have a pair of Jimmy. People keep taking it literally. You know, I couldn't get into the Jimmy Choo shoes. But I just spoken to my daughter, and she was so sad and so depressed. And I hung up, and I was thinking, when people are sad, you have to let them be sad.
Yes.
You know, as a mother, that's hard. So the only way to reach her was to write a song, yeah? And in this song, imaginary, I could be a boy and girl. I know I'm a mom, but I can make all these characters, and they have deep lives. I don't write everything I know about them, but I see them really deeply, and I can invite all these different characters. You know, one was a transvestite up on a rooftop. Another was this guy, young guy in a truck, and he's the one talking to my daughter. So I think that the thing this song has is the desire to lift up a friend. It's got a little melancholy thing in it, but it's trying to be joyful, don't you think? The Jimmy Choo Choo Choo's.
Exactly.
Yeah. And that was risky. You know, I knew it's funny, but it's, you know, it's risky to be funny in a pop song. I've always liked it if you can do it right. And when you love somebody, there's nothing you won't do. You'll be funny. And I just thought that's a natural part of what the person's trying to do. So I'm going to choo-choo.
It's very interesting that you said that, you know, you had all of these images of real characters with deep histories who could be characters in this story.
It's true.
And it also, I think, speaks to your ability to notice people. You have a great eye for noticing the people around you. Of course, I'm imposing all of this on you.
I really do.
You know, and you can sense, I think, where people are emotionally, psychologically, maybe even spiritually, and all. And a song like that makes the listener look around differently at the world. And maybe next time you're at the mall, or next time you're at an ice cream store, or next time you're somewhere, you look around at the people who are there and see that they're in a place in their life where this is really bringing them the joy that they need.
Wouldn't that be wonderful?
What a
wonderful thing to say that the work might do that. That's
It's so true. May I ask you, I mean, would you mind singing it for
us?
Let
me try.
Okay.
So let's try it. Just need to clear out your mind. Oh, motion, does that go with you anywhere? Can we leave that demon behind? Yeah. 'Cause I know the Motel 6, and I know about the truck stop stations, and I know about giving up on yourself. You don't have to tell me about giving up. Don't tear you smile. Could we just leave all this beauty for a while? Show them the house then. I think they'll love that. Yeah, show them your house.
Jimmy Choo's, the Jimmy Choo's shoes, the Jimmy Choo's, the Jimmy Choo, the Choo shoes, the Jimmy Choo shoes, the Choo shoes, the Jim, the Choo shoes, the Choo shoes, the Choo shoes, Choo shoes, Choo shoes, Choo shoes. Hey, so.
I think that was a whole step higher than the record.
I think that we should have ended up in this. Now that I do it, I think it was in G.
That was... I can still hit that note. So
yes, you can.
I can.
Wow. Well, I just love it. I just love it. I love that line, someone loves you tonight. It's so beautiful. Although I think that Motel 6 might have a case against you at some point. Oh. They're not going to be sponsoring your tour.
I'll tell you what, there's probably a lot of products that could attach to me. But, you know, I guess I'm attracted to the culture around me and giving it some kind of dignity and all those things we take for granted. And I don't do it on purpose with blue jeans and Jimmy Choo's and your Halston and your Motel 6 and the Texaco and all those names. They're a part of things we live with all the time. In 100 years, maybe people won't know those names. So anyway, there they are.
Well, I have to mention, and I'm sure you've heard this many times before, but it is uncanny how little your voice has changed in 30 years. How is that possible?
Well, I'm not sure. I mean, there are small ways that it's diminished, and I feel it more this year. It's not in the range. It's in the, how do I explain that? It's in the control of it. So, and by the control, I mean how I attack it and how I let it go. So I can still hit them, but it's getting harder to make it smooth in and smooth out. But in answer to that question, I've been aware for a long time that there is this kind of voice in a woman that you hear around the world. You can hear it in Chinese singers, Slavic singers. Ella had it.
Yes.
It's a youthful quality that does not age. I don't know why, if it's because this is where we're singing from and we don't have to try very hard to sing. You know, I never liked the trained voice and I was never attracted to it and I don't do it. And consequently, my voice has lasted. I think that training thing is maybe not so good for people. But so all I think is I'm part of some... you know, earthly female voice that sounds a little bit like a young boy.
Right? I hadn't thought of that, but you know what? Maybe so, actually.
You know, the first recordings of me when I was 15, we recorded me doing Nights in White Satin.
Oh, boy.
And when I heard it back, I was so disappointed because I sounded just like Michael Jackson singing Nights in White Satin. When we played that, because I'm this, and you know, at the time, Janis Joplin was the thing, you know, to have a gruff, rough voice to be able to scream. I will never be able to scream. And I realized right away that I sounded very different than anybody else. So that was at 14. So 8 years later, I guess it. In my own heart, it was okay for me to not sound like other people. And I began to realize it could be a really good thing to not sound like other people.
That's exactly right. And then, you know, there's another song on your album called I Wasn't Here, which is a really beautiful waltz.
Yeah, thank you.
And it's like, it's as fresh, your voice is as fresh as an ingenue's voice, you know, like beginning of life. You know, I'm beginning my life. And let's listen to just a little bit of it.
Taking my time, hurrying along, I do what I my home. The world is my cause. And it's delicious to wish this that you never feel alone.
The world is my home, the world is my cone. And it's delicious to wish this, that you never feel alone. It feels so airy, and I feel like I want to see balloons and...
Exactly. That's exactly what I see when I hear it. I see like a little child grabbing a balloon and just sailing off into the clouds.
Yes.
Did I say that, or did you just see that?
No, I just said that.
That's incredible, because that's all I see when I hear that
song. You know what?
Song.
You can write a song. Wow. That's really what it comes down to.
So I didn't write that. It just came out. I can make all that up on the fly, because you just anticipate the rhyme as you go. And you'll reveal what you're really feeling if you let yourself improvise.
Out in the weather together with wind, sky, snow. So where shall we go? To be part of the show, will you go tell them I said hello? Yes, I wasn't here. You saw me, it's clear.
Was I Wasn't Here by Ricky Lee Jones, but she is here with us. For more information about her new album, go to our website at musicinsideout.org. Coming up, the confidence-building power of AM radio. Stay with us. This is Music Inside Out. I'm Gwen Tompkins. Ricky Lee Jones is with us. We're listening to a composition she wrote years ago called Letter from the Ninth Ward. Jones wrote the song long before most people outside of New Orleans knew anything about the Ninth Ward as a neighborhood. And just to make things interesting, she paired it with the 1966 Left Bank classic, Walk Away Renee.
One way, a light I used to pass by every day. Just walk away, Renee. You won't see me follow you back home. The empty sidewalks on my block are not the same.
That's standard fare for Ricky Lee Jones. She mixes and matches nearly every genre of popular music. Each Jones album is a collection of distinct styles and eras. Jazz, pop, reggae, gospel, rock and roll, samba, electronica, R&B. Her songs rarely sound alike.
Somebody said they were like Stanley Kubrick films. I guess relieving me of some of the guilt of being so attracted to so many different kinds of music. You know, I just am. I just like it. I guess, you know, to explain it, I would say I grew up listening to AM radio in the 60s that played every style. And so it's melted together in me that all these are what we do. I probably 66, 67, you could hear Louis Armstrong sing It's a Wonderful World next to Bob Dylan singing Like a Rolling Stone, next to Ticket to Ride, next to B.J. Thomas and the Supremes and Love Child, and then Elvis singing In the Ghetto, and a total array of music that is the bricks.
Yes.
That I build with, except for country, maybe, which I didn't listen to, and I never heard opera. But aside from that, I never feel like anything is a stretch for me in terms of authenticity.
Chicago.
Uh-huh.
You moved to the Southwest, then to the Northwest, then to California. So how does the West define a child?
In my case, the first thing I think of is that it's still the new frontier, you know. There's this feeling that everybody's going someplace else. And what seeds does that plant in your head if you know you're a tumbleweed, you know? I don't know, because I haven't never not been a tumbleweed.
So in growing up, I mean, what was your sense of home? Was it particular people to be around, or was it something more personal than that? Or
I think home was inside my head from the very beginning. I mean, and it was in my mother's lap. Her smell was always home. But other than her, she worked a lot. She was gone a lot. So I think I was out walking around singing to the trees and catching frogs, and I'm always living in my imagination. They used to send notes home. Ricky looks out the window all day long. And it was very hard for me to learn not to do that.
Yeah. And your mom was a nurse, right?
When I was little, she was a waitress.
Okay.
She went back to school at 52 and became a nurse. And when I was little, waitresses made good money because they got paid minimum wage like everybody else, and then they made tips on top of it. And I always had new clothes at the beginning of school and lots of lessons, tap lessons and ballet lessons and horseback riding lessons. And she was always making sure that I could do whatever I wanted to do. She was really something.
She sounds like it.
Yeah, she was something. My father was the symbol of things. You know, his father had been in vaudeville. And my father, I feel like he was gone a lot when I was little. And when he was working, managing restaurants, he was an alcoholic. And he would come home at night drunk almost every night. And in the daytime, we had to be really quiet so we didn't wake him up. So when I saw him, it was scary. Yes. And that's how he was mostly. But then there were these spectacular weekends where he wasn't scary. And I'd sit on his lap and he'd teach me songs and he'd play puppet games with me. And these are the things I tend to remember more than how scary he was when he was hungover or whatever it was that made me afraid of him, because he never hurt me. When I became a teenager, I saw the violence a little more, but anyway, I think, did that answer that?
It did, but my understanding is also that he was a singer.
Yes.
And that he introduced you to the American Songbook.
Totally.
Say, grab your coat, and get your hat. Leave your worries on the doorstep. Just direct your feet to the sunny side of the street. Can't you hear that pitter-pat? Say that happy tune is your step. Life can be so sweet on the sunny side of the street.
My father took me to an audition for a thing called the Lou King Show. The Lou King Show was the kid, you know, a chance for kids to be on TV. Gangsters.
In Phoenix?
Yeah. Oh, totally run by gangsters. And when we got to the Lou King Show and I auditioned and I sang On Sunny Side of the Street, Ragtime Cowboy Joe.
Okay.
Guy played the piano, went off a bit. I stayed with it. They were very impressed. And then they told my mother and father that they'd have to buy an insurance policy for me to be on the show.
Oh, Lord.
And they were just beside themselves, you know. And I remember being in the car and them saying, we'll buy this insurance policy, Ricky, if you really want us to. And I said, not a chance. And I was eight. But I could already see how, and I really wanted to be, but I could see that they would have to work for months to pay for an insurance policy to be on the Lou King Show. And so that was my first toe into show business.
Okay, how does this cowboy song go?
Yeah, right. Oh, he sings raggedy music to the cattle while he swings. Back and forward in the saddle on a horse, a pretty good horse that is syncopated, gated, and there's such a funny meter to the roar of his repeater, how they run when they hear the fellow's come, because the western folks all know that he's a rootin' tootin' highfalutin' son of a gun from Arizona. Ragtime cowboy, talk about your cowboy, ragtime cowboy Joe. I remember it.
That's a good one.
Yeah. Okay. So I remember my father coming home when I was 7 or 8 and teaching me my funny Valentine, which was a bit of work. And I was struggling with you make me smile, because it changes to major.
Yes.
And I didn't understand it. I probably kept going, you make me smile, whatever it would be that would keep it in the minor. And I remember seeing the frustration on him and feeling really like I disappointed him. It took me, I'm going to say, 3 days to a week to understand the transition from minor to major. And at that point, he became proud of me. And I suppose somehow that his pride, because now he had, I don't know if this is a thing with men and children, but now he had some way he could relate to me. I had a personality. You know, there was the son, the brother. There was the oldest daughter. Who am I? So now I had something. And I think I loved singing, but I can't help but imagine that the fact that my father loved me singing help me somehow.
It makes all the difference.
I had that from my parents. I always thought it had to do with the vaudeville thing, that singing and show business was what we were meant to be. If we could get back into show business, that's where we were meant to be. Because I hear so many things about people's parents going, what are you singing for? Stop that singing. And that's the opposite of what I had.
Wow. Well, I have to say, I mean, My Funny Valentine is one of the, it's your version, is one of the best versions I've ever heard. It's on Girl at the at Her Volcano.
You're right.
And, I mean, do you sing it the same way every time, or?
Well, back then, it was a very dramatic experience for me to sing that song. I don't know if that had to do with, you know, for my father, I'm singing it, but also it's a very dramatic song. So, you know, I find a way to make it my own.
Yeah. Still, you're my favorite worker. Is your figure?
less than Greek is your mouth.
At some point, I'd rather be a horn because I'm being limited by the text and what the melody does. So I think that's what I did. The performance is dramatic, but the choices are not so dramatic. And I stand by that. You know, I think I've been kind of categorically rejected by the jazz community, but I don't mind because I know I'm the itinerant outsider to whatever I do. Whatever I do, it's not like other people are doing it. So some people are going to go, that is stupid, because that's not how it should be done. Mm. And I think that should be has really cursed jazz for a long time.
Absolutely.
It's sucked out. You know, the Joe Henderson played the saxophone on Dat Dare on the Pop Pop record. And at my 40th birthday, which would have been about 4 years later, I invited him. I don't know how I saw him, but I was in Ojai or Ventura or something, and he said, "So, I was always hoping you'd make another record like Pop Pop, because I really thought you had started down a new road, and jazz really needs that." And I was like, "Oh my God, you know, he'll never know what that meant." Sorry. I don't want to cry. But he'll never know. He would never know, because he died not long after. Because I had that Pop-Pop record was just torn apart in the press. So when a fellow musician said, "I got it, and I wished that you would have done it more," at that dark period, it really made me feel good. And that's a way turn from where I was with my mother and father, but all the twists and turns of our lives, they never lead us back where we started anyway. So.
Hey, who's that in my chair? And what's he doing there? And mama, oh, hey mama, can I go over there? Hey mama, what is square? And where do we get air? And mama, oh, hey, can I have that big elephant over there? Where's the cookie? She doesn't want anything here. She's forever demanding to know who, what, why, and where. Where's the deaf child? Sometimes the question can't well. Like, mama, can I have that big elephant over there? Don't wanna comb my hair. And where's my teddy bear? And mama, oh, hey, look at the cowboy coming now. And can I have a pair of boots like that to wear? Mama, can I have that big elephant over there?
Dat Dare is from the 1991 Ricky Lee Jones album, Pop Pop. Joe Henderson plays tenor saxophone. Henderson was primarily a band leader, but sometimes played sideman, most notably with Shirley Horn, Miles Davis, Lee Morgan, Chick Corea, and of course, Ricky Lee Jones. I love that kid. Coming up, Ricky Lee Jones gives up her beret. Stay with us. I'm Gwen Tompkins, and this is Music Inside Out. Ricky Lee Jones's new album places her in New Orleans on the other side of Desire, which is a street not far from our studio. Here's her song, Blinded by the Hunt.
I know where I'm going because I've been there before, floating in the sun and laid on the shore. I've caught a beautiful way. I came in all the way. Please help me climb. Again, yeah. Sometimes I tell myself it doesn't matter to me if I live in chains or if I'm back to be free. I've been out here so long that I don't know anymore. I get lost just walking out the door. Yeah, yeah. Cause I'm blinded by the hunt. Cause I'm blinded by the hunt. Cause I'm blinded by the hunt. I am blinded by the hunt. Well, I can't. Just one way left for me to find a little peace.
Sometimes I tell myself it doesn't matter to me if I live in chains or if I fight to be free. I've been out here for so long that I don't know anymore. I get lost just walking out the door. What made you think, what brought that to you?
I think I felt that was everybody's experience. I think everybody wakes up and gets lost before they even go out the door. And they give up. I mean, not only me, but they just give up. So I think that's where it comes from.
It's the name of the song is Blinded by the Hunt.
Yeah.
What's the hunt?
What is the hunt? Whatever you're hunting for, the other side of desire, whatever it is, that thing you're seeking, that you seek and seek and seek. Everybody seeks so hard a thing that they might have long ago come to it, but for looking so hard, didn't see it.
Let me ask you this. This is a question about that girl, that 22, 23-year-old girl, Ricky Lee Jones. You know, I know that you've said subsequently that you never wanted to be anybody's role model. But the truth of the matter is, I don't know a girl who didn't want to be Ricky Lee Jones.
Back then,
yeah. I mean, you were what most girls wanted to be. I mean, you were expressing yourself in song in an idiosyncratic, completely unique and personal way. You were smart as hell. You looked good. You wore a beret. You smoked cigarillos. I mean, you hung out with cool people. I mean, who wouldn't want to be you? But was that girl really you? Was that girl real?
That girl was real, totally.
Talk about your people in one way. Talk about your people till your hair turns gray. Sister's in a mustard. She loves to walk the puppy. Pickles in the relish. She never gets enough. Hershey milkshake steaming on a stick. With a cardboard sandwich. Oh, let us get thick. It's not because I'm dirty. It's not because I'm clean. It's not because I kiss the boys behind the magazines. Hey, boys, how
how about the face? Here comes Ricky with the girl on tape. She don't know your name. She knows what you got from your matching ball to the chicken in the pot. Chicken in the pot. Chicken in the pot.
But the problem is, once that gets sold, it's confusing if you're real. It's, you know, and when you're an actor, you get to play a part, you go home. But when you're a musician and you're selling yourself or the, you know, these concepts that are sellable about me are sold, it becomes really hard for me to keep them as my own. That beret was mine. I did wear gloves. I did behave that way. But that's not all that's me.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all that's sold as me. That's the part that's fun to grab onto, right?
Yeah.
And then also you change as you get older. You would. But in my case, I'm reacting to that. And I think in the magazine, I just went totally the other way.
I plucked my
eyebrows and wore... really straight clothes, and I was like, I'm not taking drugs anymore. I'm not, I promise. Take a picture of me now. And, you know, so much of my life has been a reaction to, well, of my art has been a reaction to the thing that I did before.
Sure, sure. But, you know, you wrote a very powerful personal essay that goes along with your current album, The Other Side of Desire. And in it you say, so now, no beret, no boyfriends, no badass bravado. I am badass, but who cares?
Yeah, I didn't want to deny the badass part.
Well, so when you gave up the beret, and did you get something better in return?
We're just talking about it as things in a job, things in a marketing. No, I never got my hands on something that gave people as strong a sense of me as that. And even all of my life, people still talk about Chucky's in love. They like that time.
Sure.
They like that. And I came to peace with that, I guess, in the last 7 or 8 years. And that is part of who I am, you know. And that felt good, you know. But it took a long time to accept the arc of my life. I don't know if that's the gift I give myself as I turn 60, but I feel I am what I am. I like what I am. I'm Popeye now, you know. So.
Lived everywhere. You've lived out west, you've lived in Chicago, you lived in Paris. Why New Orleans? Why now?
Well, the first answer is that I wanted to leave LA, and I'd lived there a long time and just hadn't fostered any community whatsoever. I had no friends who came over. Nobody said, let's go to dinner. I mean, nobody.
What?
And I just said, enough of this. This is no life, you know. My daughter was there, my ex-husband was there, and my choice to leave them was a profound one and go off on my own. And so the two places I was thinking of, besides just going to South America or something, were the Keys in Florida
mm-hmm.
and New Orleans. And the Keys, because I love being near animals. The Key I like has this miniature deer walking around.
Really?
They only live there. They actually swim in the ocean from island to island. Could you imagine being on a boat and little antlers going by? It's just like a fairy place. But, you know, you're isolated. So I made the choice to be near people. I thought the way back, and if I think of it as like an axe and I'm pulling my way back, the way back is through people. And I guess I was open, but I knew that I wanted to have people that I saw every day that I knew and have coffee with people and look at people in the eye and say hello to people and not live in my car.
Now, you lived in New Orleans before, right? I mean, you wrote Pirates, the album Pirates here? Is that right?
I had an apartment here. I didn't write it here, but it was inspired by some critters I met locally who were up to nefarious activities. And I was, you know, especially Woody and Dutch, they were all, they were just a fantastic group of people up to no good.
Well, you know, we're sort of coming to the end of our interview, but I don't want us to stop before we talk about the beauty, the unexpected beauty of this song, Vows de mon père.
Oh, good.
Lover's Oath.
Yeah.
That is one beautiful song, and it has a timeless quality to it, where you can think, oh, my word, the Carter family could sing this. And then you realize what the lyrics are, and you're like, the Carter family would blush to sing this.
It's true. And I couldn't tell if anybody was noticing the first line. It was like, is anybody noticing there was something? And actually, so how that happened was I was meeting and talking with Louis Michaud, who's the violinist in Lost by Ramblers. And I was trying to write songs that had to do with him that maybe he could sing. So then I thought, I haven't written a love song in a long, long time. And that's kind of a bad sign. It means I'm not thinking about, I mean, I know I'm not, but it means I'm not thinking about lovers and being in love. So I set about writing this, and it ended up so deep and beautiful.
How can I tell you the way I feel when you're inside? You
It must be made of all of lovers, but it was also imagining this woman. And she loves for all time. She will always live and always love him. And in this place, like, they rise above and they see their grandchildren. They don't even have to know them because they're made of their heart. One of my favorite lines
exactly.
I wrote.
Exactly.
That's what lovers are, though, aren't they? They are lovers, Romeo and Juliet, and they love always.
Ricky Lee Jones, thank you so much for being with us. You've been wonderful.
I had such a wonderful afternoon. Thank you very much for having me. And listen, thank you for telling people about me. I really appreciate it.
We'll stay together.
You've been listening to Music Inside Out. Our show is produced by Lynette Johnson, Kayla Green, Quentin Ward, Melissa McLean, and Jason Rhine. Music Inside Out is produced in partnership with WWNO. For more information about Ricky Lee Jones and a complete playlist of all songs featured in today's show, go to our website at musicinsideout.org. I'm Gwen Tompkins, and this is Music Inside Out.
Major support for Music Inside Out comes from the Historic New Orleans Collection. Music Inside Out also receives support from the Ruth U. Fertel Foundation, the New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Foundation, Baba Jim Istanbul Studios and Mastering, the Arts Council New Orleans, Surf Song Realty of Orange Beach, Alabama, Adam Newman Designs, and WWNO. Donations to Music Inside Out are tax deductible thanks to our partnership with the National Performance Network. For more information on how you can support our program, please go to our website at musicinsideout.org/support.